Well, it would be very tempting for me to spend the rest of my time this morning thanking people who are in this audience who have had a profound influence on my life. I'd like to tell you about Nancy Tumlinson and the 5th and 6th grade class. I'd like to tell you about Charles Lopez, who became, as it were, a father in the faith to me. I'd like to tell you about your present elders, who many were deacons when I was growing up here. And I'd like to tell you what you've meant to my family and the way in which you have encouraged us to remain true to the Lord. I know I would be remiss without saying thank you for the invitation to come home and to introduce to you, if you've not met, my family, Melissa, Morgan, and David, who told me right before services start, keep it fast. That's Morgan and David, not Melissa. And I'm privileged to be reunited with my fellow percussionist and co-laborer, Jeff Wilson. We were at Florida College together, played in the band together, and so proud of the work he's doing here, and it's obvious your love and appreciation for him and his family. I'm excited to be invited today to Brian's going away party. I have to tell you, this past summer at the Dry Creek camp, I had the 12th grade boys, and Trey Haskett was in my cabin, and we were on the last day of camp talking about people who have made a great influence in our life, who we look up to the most, and Trey said Brian. And I appreciate his ability in God's kingdom and look forward to hearing good things from the West Coast from this day forward. It's a pleasure to be back and to have the opportunity to do what I love to do more than anything else, and that is preach and teach the gospel, God's word. And I want to thank you for the invitation to come and do this. I just have one question, though. What took so long? How do you feel about honorable mention? Didn't get a ribbon, but you got honorable mention. I feel about that kind of the same way I do after I preach and somebody gets up and says, well, we appreciated Bubba's efforts today, which is another way of saying, nice try. One of our sisters back home, an older lady, told me, she said, you're sure doing good. She said, when you first got here, I said to myself, this kid's never going to make it. Well, there's an honorable mention that I wouldn't mind being a part of, that's found in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. As the writer of Hebrews is going through the great hall of faith and great characters of the Old Testament, men like Noah and Abraham and Moses, in Hebrews chapter 11 at verse 32, he says, and what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets. How would you like to at least be mentioned by name in this chapter? That if I had more time, I could go into more detail about these people, but let me just mention them and reference them for further use. I want to talk about one of those men who are given honorable mention in verse 32. And I invite you to consider his story that's told for us in Judges, the 7th chapter. Judges chapter 7, we learn about Gideon, in particular his war with the Amalekites and Midianites. The book of Judges in its entirety covers about 350 years of Israel's history. But if we were going to produce a documentary on the nation of Israel, this would not be a part that we would highlight. Because even the good guys of this era who are mentioned, like Jephthah and Samson, Jephthah, whose rash vow ended in him offering his daughter as a sacrifice. Samson, whose brute strength was overshadowed by his weakness for weak women. But the verse that tells the story of the book of Judges is found twice in its pages. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. And I would submit to you this morning, if there is a word that occurs over and over in the book of Judges, it is the word again. Again, the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. It is a cycle that repeats over and over through these 350 years. Israel starts to serve some false god, and they fall into oppression, and God sends to them a judge or a deliverer to rescue them from the hand of oppression and restore peace, only to see again the sons of Israel do evil in the sight of the Lord. In Judges chapter 7, we find Israel at the hands of Midian and Amalek fled to the mountains. Their own land they can't live in. Their own crops they can't eat because their enemy has overtaken them. And so they cry out to the Lord, and this time their answer comes in the form of Gideon. In Judges chapter 7 at verse 15, for the sake of time, we'll start reading at verse 15. It came about when Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation that he bowed in worship. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into your hands." He divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put trumpets and empty pitchers into the hands of all of them with torches inside the pitchers. And he said to them, "Look at me and do likewise, and behold, when I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. I and all who are with me blow the trumpet. You also blow the trumpets all around the camp and say, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch when they had just posted the watch, and they smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. When the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, they held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing and cried, "Sword for the Lord and for Gideon." And every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army fled, crying out as they fled. And when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against the other, even throughout the whole army, and the army fled as far as Beth Shittah toward Zerah, as far as the edge of Abel-Meholah by Tabith. The men of Israel were summoned from Naphtali and Asher and all Manasseh. They pursued Midian. We're talking this week about building something. Building something that counts. Building something that matters. Building something that lasts. Character. Character, as one has defined, is who you are when nobody's looking. Character is who you are on the outside, or who you are on the inside, which reflects who you are on the outside. And to help us build a character that is pleasing to God, we're going to study Bible characters. We're going to study people who, like Gideon, invited in our text this morning, do as I do. And for our purposes this morning, I want to invite you, like Gideon, to join the army. Join the army. We are a people who are at war. We are a people who are fighting supernatural forces. If it is so that the enemies of the United States can amass weapons of mass destruction, what in the world do you think our enemy has at his disposal? If it is so that men can fight and nation versus nation in our day and people die, what happens in this spiritual warfare? When souls are lost, and people are stationed away, not from their family for a few months, but eternally from God. We are at war. I want to invite you to join the army of the Lord. What can we learn about Gideon? What can we learn about this character that will help us in our warfare? Well, I want to suggest three things very quickly. And especially do I want you to notice from our text, verse 21, every man stood in his place. The first thing I want you to see about this army that we are to join is that the army of the Lord, number one, doesn't have one soldier to spare. God's army does not have one soldier to spare. When Gideon fought, every man stood in his place because they needed every man. You recall that when the battle is first introduced to us, the Amalekites and the Midianites are allied together, and their number is described as innumerable as locusts, even their camels as innumerable as the sands of the seashore. But finally, a number is put on their army at 135,000 in chapter 8 and verse 10. 135,000 are camped there in the valley, ready to go to war against God's army. So you enter versus them, Gideon's army, of 32,000. And the Lord sees that from his perspective and says, well, I don't like those odds, Gideon, so I'm going to make your army smaller. And to me, what is a bit humorous about that is that the Lord says, so that your army won't win and think they did it with their own power. Now, folks, if there is ever an army in the history of war that would go into battle outnumbered 4-1 and win and not give God credit, the Israelites would have done that. He said, I'm not even going to give you the opportunity. Gideon, send everyone home who's afraid. That left 10,000. Still got 135,000 camped in the valley. Now we're at 10,000. The Lord said, well, I still don't like that. Gideon, lead them to the water to drink. And every man who takes water in his hands and brings it up and laps like a dog, you keep that man. There were 300 of those. And the Lord said, let's go to war. If you're in Gideon's army, and we're just going to play man-to-man combat, you, by yourself, are going to have to kill 450 men. Yet when the battle began, every man stood in his place. The army of the Lord doesn't have one soldier to spare. We need every man. Consider the odds that are against us. Look at the world around us and see how many are fighting with the opposition. How many are in the devil's army. At the first outset, we are vastly outnumbered. And so we're going to need every man in this conflict. We cannot afford to have people who are sitting on the sidelines while everybody else goes to war. Do you remember when the Israelites first went into the land of Canaan, and the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad found their place on the opposite side of the Jordan? They said, we like this land here, we can spread out, and so we're going to stay here, and the rest of you can cross the Jordan, and you can conquer the land. Do you remember what Moses said to them in Numbers 32 in verse 6? Shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? Are you going to let God's army go fight, and you say, well, I'll just stay in my place. I'll just stay right here, and you go join the army. We can't afford that. We need every man. We need every single soldier because we don't have one to spare. Jesus said, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, that they are white for harvest. Behold, he said, Matthew 9:37, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers, the workers, are few. We talked about this morning, we need to get more laborers in the vineyard. But we need to be getting better production of the ones we got out there. Because we don't have one soldier to spare. What if the Lord looked out over this army this morning? Said, well, we're going to pare it down a little. With Gideon, he sent home everyone who was afraid. What if the Lord said, I'm going to send everyone home who doesn't read their Bibles? Everyone who didn't pray this week, you're dismissed. Everyone who's too busy, everyone who's too lazy, everyone who doesn't come back Sunday night, Wednesday night, gospel meetings, everyone who doesn't care, would you make the first cut? We've lost many already in the army of the Lord. They've switched sides. They're fighting with the devil. They're fighting for him. We cannot afford to lose one more. Because in the army of the Lord, we need every man. I want you to notice, secondly, about the army of the Lord, that it requires, if you're going to enlist in this army, the army of the Lord, number two, requires unconditional faith. Unconditional faith. You see, the numbers were not the only mismatch in this battle. Somebody says, well, an army of 300 men might be able to outmaneuver or outarm or outstrategize a huge army of 135,000. But the Israelites were not trained soldiers. In fact, one of the reasons the book of Judges tells us God didn't drive out all the nations is so that the sons of Israel might be taught war. And they weren't going into battle with a great weaponry about them. They were going with a trumpet and a torch and a pitcher. We took our kids, it's been several years now, to the Houston Jubilee. And I remember David was still in a stroller back then. And we were going around seeing all the animals, and we found a lot of people who were around one exhibit. So we decided, well, we need to see that. And so we made our way up to the front, and I had to lift up David so that he could look into the exhibit and see the animals. And everybody around us was oohing and aahing, and I heard David go, wow! And I looked down, and he was watching a squirrel run past the cage. He wasn't even looking in the cage. I have to imagine that we see 135,000 spread out over the valley of Jezreel, and we would have said, wow! And when God looked down from His throne in heaven, from His perspective, He was so unimpressed. See, Israel was going into battle with something the other side didn't have. Did you notice what he said to Gideon in verse 7? I will deliver you with the 300 men. Verse 15, when Gideon rallied the troops and they went over the plan, he said, arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into your hands. Their battle cry in verse 18 was, for the Lord and for Gideon. No mismatch here. It's the other side that's outnumbered. It's the other side that's in despair. Because when you add God to your side, that puts you in the majority. And so when you join the army of the Lord, This requires your unconditional faith in Him, no matter the odds that are seemingly stacked against you. Now, we know what unconditional love is. We have songs about that. We have poems about that. We even have expressed that. Unconditional love says, I love you, period. Not I love you when you do this, or I love you if you do that, but I love you, period, and nothing's going to take that away. Do you not see that unconditional faith is on the same principle? It doesn't say, well, Lord, I trust you when you do this, or I believe you, Lord, if you'll do this. I believe you, period. I trust you, period, and nothing is going to take that away. Only then can every man stand in his place. 1 Corinthians chapter 16 at verse 13, Paul gave these marching orders to the army of the church at Corinth. Be on the alert. Stand firm in your faith. Act like men. Be strong. That's unconditional faith. Even when the devil himself is on the other side, we will not shrink back, but we will press forward. It reminds me what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 5 at verse 8 when he warned about the adversary that we wage war with. Be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world. A few years back, there were a group of us from Southside that went up to a gospel meeting at a little church in Timmins, Ontario, Canada. Timmins is about 400 miles north of Toronto. It's about six blocks south of where Santa's Village is, just way up there. I didn't know the world went that far. But there's a little group there of 30 Christians who are trying their best to serve God where they are. And so we took some of our people up there. A couple of our elders went. We took some of our teenagers. And we preached a meeting there. When we got back, I was talking to our young people about their impression of the trip. What'd you think about your Canadian brethren? You know what they said? They're going through the same things we are. Here we are, separated on opposite ends of the globe, and they're having to flee fornication. They're having to say no to things that they know they shouldn't do. They're having to honor father and mother. They're going through the same things. That's what Peter said. He said, you have a great adversary. And of all the animals he could have used to describe him, a lion seeking someone to devour. But you resist him. Why? Because you have unconditional faith. You realize he's not as big as God is. And you be encouraged that the same things you're going through, the same battles you're fighting, are being accomplished by your brothers and sisters in the world. The reason we're studying Bible characters is not for our entertainment, but so that we might be encouraged that if Gideon and his 300 men can fight a mighty enemy and be victorious through God, then we can too. And if we will pull together, if we will fight together, it is not we who will be afraid. The earth shall tremble neath our tread and echo with our shout. You believe that? If you're going to join this army, you're going to have unconditional faith. Even when it seems like we're vastly outnumbered. Because when the Lord is leading you, when the Lord is delivering you, you go from victory unto victory. At first, there's such a confusion in the battle. They wake up and see the 300 torches around their camp, and the enemy hears the 300 trumpets, and they start killing one another with their swords. and 120,000 die. But then something very interesting happens. The rest of them decide, we got to get out of here. And so 15,000 flee. No more of the surprise element. But 15,000 are running from 300. And don't you love chapter 8 and verse 4? Gideon and the 300 men who were with him came to the Jordan and crossed over, weary yet pursuing. They realized who was fighting for them. They realized who would bring about the victory. They understood it was the army of the Lord. An army that requires unconditional faith. Would you notice one final thing about the army of the Lord? If you're going to join the army, if you're going to be like Gideon, do as I do. The army of the Lord, number three, has a place for everyone. You see, it says every man stood, but it says every man stood in his place. Can you imagine the sight that awoke the enemy when they came out of their tents and saw that they were surrounded? But rewind just a little bit and think about the first time Gideon expressed this to his troops. They called everybody together and said, here's our plan. Can you imagine what loss of effect there would have been had not every man stood in his place? What if just some of them would have said, you've got to be kidding me. This is how we're going to win? I knew I should have left when I had the chance. This will never work. We're going to get slaughtered out there. We don't even have a sword or a spear. But not so with these men of unconditional faith. Every man stood in his place because the army of the Lord has a place for everyone. I want you to know this morning, if you are not in your place, then you're out of place. Because there's a place for everyone. There's a part for everyone to play when it's the Lord's army. I was preaching in San Antonio where Melissa's parents used to live. We were home for the holidays. And I spoke that Sunday morning. And as preachers do, we stand at the back of the building after services and we call it shaking the people out. And folks were coming by. And they're thanking me for my efforts, you know. And there was this little boy, I think he was 5 years old. And he had his little suit on and sandals. And he was waiting in line. He was going to talk to the preacher. And he waited his turn and he got up there and he stuck his hand up. Now, he didn't have to stick it very high, but he stuck his hand up. And he said, that's good preaching. He was the only one that said that day. But he found his place. He found something he could do. And he thought, well, it's not that big a deal. Well, I still remember it. Because army of the Lord has a place for everyone. I cannot do everything, said Edward Everett Hale. But I can do something. I'm just one. But still, I am one. And what I can do, I should do. And what I should do, by the grace of God, I will do. Have you found your place in God's kingdom? Your place in the army of the Lord. Now be careful, because it's very easy to know where everyone else's place is. You ever notice that? Well, what's he doing? He has no business being up there. What's she doing? I do that better than her. I ought to have been the one to have been selected to do that. Where is your place? Where do you fit? Where can you serve? We like to joke often about people sitting in, quote, their pew. We're creatures of habit. But I must tell you, it's easy for me to get up to preach on Sunday and just look around the auditorium and see God's soldiers sitting in their places. And I have often imagined what the view must look like from the throne on high. For God to look out over His army, seeing every man standing in his place. To see those who can barely get one foot in front of the other. But it's the Lord's day, and I'm in the Lord's army, so I'm going to go stand with God's people. To see those who had the discouraging news and report from the doctor and could have very easily said, well, I just don't feel like being around people today, but said, I'm going to go get in my place. To see those who are discouraged, who've worked hard all day Wednesday, and don't feel like they could give one more ounce of effort, but go get in their place and immediately think to themselves, I'm glad I came. The army of the Lord has a place for everyone. If you're not in your place, you're out of place. Let every man find where he should stand, and upon finding it, stand firm. In Judges chapter 8, we find this conclusion in verse 28 to our story. So Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their heads anymore. And the land was undisturbed for 40 years in the days of Gideon. Because of the faith of a few, peace was brought to an entire nation of people. And the enemies of the Lord were made to say, the battle belongs to the Lord. And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, who by faith conquered kingdoms, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. And he still says, do as I do. God wants a kind of character, responds to his will in humble obedience, that asks the question, what must I do? If you're ready to join the army of the Lord this morning, would you come and confess your total allegiance to Jesus the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you bow before Him as the captain of your salvation and submit your will to His, to Him who said, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved? Would you come back to His army If you've been fighting against him, would you come take your stand with God's people that you can stand before him and receive the victor's crown? If we can assist you, we invite you to come right now while we stand, while we sing.